When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh. This is Chuck.
Chuck.
Yes. No.
Boom.
I am Chuck. I'm here. I'm with you.
Did you prepare today, as usual, that kind of method approach to podcasting?
No, I know what you're getting at. No, I did not.
You just feeling a little hinky? Or
I'm hinky. I'm hinky.
Can you pull yourself together, you think?
I'm together. I'm with it. I'm fine.
This is kind of an important one. It's a little out there, but it's all true.
It is.
Okay, so you're fine.
I'm fine. I'm good. Let's do it.
Well, we're talking today about a certain set of experiments carried out by a certain government agency known as the CIA.
Yes.
And they carried out an experiment with another three-letter word, LSD.
Right.
On unsuspecting Americans.
Yeah, I think most people would not expect to hear those six letters together in the same sentence.
No.
And this is not widely known, so.
No, it really isn't. And frankly, it should be. And I think it's kind of one of those things that supports just about every American's notion of what the CIA is up to at any given time.
Right, right.
And yet, it's just so out there, so fantastic that they actually did this,
right,
that it's kind of hard to believe. But this is documented. This actually happened.
It did.
Okay. Do you want to give a little background first? How about you tell us how we know that this stuff happened?
Well, because it's on record.
It is on record.
It's actually factually on record.
Yeah, there are a couple of congressional hearings on it.
Exactly. And this what amazes me is this happened in the 1950s,
mm-hmm,
which is even less likely. Because when you think about LSD, acid, as they call it, as the kids call it, you think about the 1970s and or late 60s in,
right,
Woodstock.
Right.
But it was actually in the 1950s when it was first being experimented with.
And we're talking the early 50s, too. Apparently, we were really, you know, full on into the Cold War. And we believed everything we heard about the Russians. Apparently, the CIA found out that the Russians were involved in some sort of truth serum, mind control, Manchurian candidate experiments, right?
Uh-huh.
And they found out that the Swiss pharmaceutical company that will ring a bell of the people who've taken acid and listened to our podcast, Sandoz Pharmaceuticals.
Right.
They had this stuff that was first created by a Swiss chemist named Albert Hofmann. It was LSD-25. And they apparently had 100,000 hits.
100 million.
100 million hits
supposedly
available to anyone who wanted to buy. It was on the open market. They were a legitimate pharmaceutical company. And this is back when, as a lot of people don't know, LSD was an actual legitimate pharmaceutical.
Right.
It was also often used later on for therapy. Did you know that? In the States, Cary Grant was huge. Huge into acid.
Really?
I kid you not, my friend.
Wow.
He took many a trip, and he actually, I can't remember who he's married to. It may have been Mia Farrow or somebody.
Right.
He essentially chased her off by being so insistent about his wife undergoing acid therapy, LSD therapy, that
yeah.
she was like, you're a freak.
I could see that.
Yeah. So, okay, so let's get back to the Sandoz thing.
Right. Forget Cary Grant.
Yeah. They've got 100 million hits of acid on the market, which, I mean, really, the CIA heard this, and they're thinking, oh, okay, 100 million hits. They could take out New York, L.A. The Russians could get this into the water supply, and all of a sudden we have a population that's not listening to us anymore.
Right. I guess they wanted to create some sort of a chaos or mass hysteria or mm-hmm. something like that.
Or, at worst, like the Manchurian Candidate program, unwitting assassins who, you know, carried out these murders and had no recollection of doing it or being programmed. So they're like these perfect assassins.
Right.
They kind of suspected that LSD might help with that kind of thing. So when the CIA hears that these hits are on the market, they scramble to buy them.
Yeah, that's what I love.
Turns out there's only,
yeah,
how much?
40,000, I think, in the U.S. Good old U.S. government said, we'll take all of them.
Yeah, so they bought 40,000 hits of LSD, acid in hand. They start carrying out their own horrific
right.
experiments.
They went camping. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. They built campfires.
Right. That's how Burning Man actually started.
So they have all this acid, and they say, well, okay, we have to figure out how to make our own Manchurian candidates and figure out how to use this as a truth theorem ourselves. It just so happened that this acid was purchased at a time that the CIA launched this project called MK Ultra.
Right.
And this project was huge.
It actually doesn't stand for anything, I found
no,
out.
No, I never found it either. It doesn't stand. There were some other projects, like MK projects, that did stand for things, but
right.
Ultra, it didn't stand for anything, which is unusual.
Yeah.
So they carry out MK Ultra, which is 149 sub-projects. And it's this vast range of basically figuring out how to get into people's minds or kill them. Like one, apparently, they had magicians come in and teach CIA operatives how to use sleight of hand
this
to poison
great.
People's drinks.
Yeah.
I can virtually guarantee you a lot of magicians were shot in the back of the head after they gave that class.
I bet. That was during the big magic freeze of the 1950s.
Yeah. Yeah. That would account for it,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That was one sub-project. Another was using electroconvulsive therapy to get people to talk.
Right.
Which I'm sure was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet it worked too.
Yeah. There was radiation treatments. They wanted to see how much radiation people could be exposed to. And this was actually one of the more horrific aspects of it. There's a video on YouTube. If you, I think, type in something like MK Ultra testimony, or radiation testimony. There is a woman who's testifying at a hearing. I think it's one of the 1970s hearings. And she's talking about how she was an orphan.
Uh-huh.
And she and everybody else in the orphanage were made to be test subjects by the CIA. Not on LSD, but like radiation and all that. And she's
right.
clearly broken. She's a broken person now. She's much older by this time. And
sure.
It's just crazy to see somebody who actually was experimented on. She's an American. She has all these rights that just got thrown out the window.
Well, yeah, and I know that they experimented on prisoners a lot, too.
Yeah, specifically black prisoners.
Right.
So here's where we get into some of the shadier LSD experiments. That's one of them.
Right.
They go into a black prison and basically, against the inmate's will, as far as I know, test LSD on them. Now, imagine taking LSD in prison.
Right.
I can't think of anything worse than that combo.
No.
And these were, like I said, this was an all-black prison, and it was just bad. That's
sure.
just a bad experiment. Another one was they lured heroin junkies.
Yeah, I love this one, too. Because and how did they lure them?
They paid them in heroin.
Yeah.
The CIA paid these people in heroin. And
right.
this is, again, documented fact.
Right.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
There were a lot of other experiments going on, and actually this stuff was so rampant, as you know, Chuck, that the CIA actually developed an acid culture for a while.
They did, within their own system there.
Yeah, they used to dose one another at parties.
Right.
They used to take it themselves recreationally.
Uh-huh.
Like at any given like LSD conference, retreat, something like that, people were probably running around on acid.
I know, you know, reading your article, it seemed almost unreal.
Yeah, clearly.
And it sounded like the 1950s and the CIA, it was almost like a prank. Like, you know, hey, Agent 99, let's just go drop some acid in Agent 88's drink there.
That's almost precisely what happened.
That is crazy.
And then there'd be like a group who dosed somebody, and then everybody would be watching them. Right. And then like a half hour later, the joke would be on him. And he'd spend the next, you know, 8 to 12 hours just whatever.
Yeah.
So the CIA was well versed in how it felt to take acid. But the CIA operative isn't the average American.
No.
So they wanted to experiment on normal people. And I say normal kind of unwillingly because they did have a certain criteria of who could be targeted for it. So they went to kind of the seamy underbelly of cities, and they found like hookers and junkies and
exactly
who else?
Well, the guy, the
pornographers.
Yeah, the guy who found these folks posed as a pimp. Is that right?
Yeah,
kind of had an alternate personality.
Let's talk about these people. All right, there's this guy. All right, his name is Dr. Sidney Gottlieb.
Yeah,
this guy has a club foot. He overcame an almost debilitating stutter. And he went on to become the chief of the technical division for the CIA. Now, this guy's greatest hits, among, you know, carrying out the LSD experiments, was developing Agent Orange.
Uh-huh.
Another drug that he had tested by the people who were conducting the CIA or the LSD tests eventually gave way to erectile dysfunction drugs.
Right.
He did a lot of crazy stuff. And some less solid evidence puts him in Africa at the time that Ebola broke out of nowhere.
Right, maybe not a coincidence there.
Yeah.
Now, was he a medical doctor? Or was he?
He was a medical doctor.
Okay.
He was probably, from what I understand of him, he probably had several doctorates, to different degrees.
That makes me feel much better.
And I think he was also he may have been a chemist actually. Now that I think about it, but I think he did have a medical training as well. That's the guy who's running the head of this. He's the head of this experiment.
Right.
Right below him is one of the most legendary characters you will ever hear about in your life. His name is George Hunter White.
They need to make a biopic film about this guy.
I can't believe they haven't already. He originally started out, he really first made a name for himself by posing as a heroin trafficker. For the better part of the 1930s, and busting up this Chinese opium ring, and he took down hundreds of people.
Right.
But to get there, I mean, like, I'm sure he had to smoke opium quite frequently.
Oh yeah.
And he basically infiltrated this. He took a blood oath with this Chinese gang he was in, and he eventually took him down. So that's how he made a name for himself. But he didn't really. I hate to use this cliche. He didn't play by the rules. Not only did he not play by the rules, the guy's totally amoral. He was a completely amoral character.
A bit of a rogue agent.
Yeah, I think he just kind of went whichever way his allegiances lie.
Whichever way the acid told him to go. Actually.
Pretty much, yeah, because he was definitely one of the ones who took the acid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it all starts with him. Like, the most that we know about the LSD experiments, they go back to George Hunter White. So White gets tapped by Gottlieb to carry out these experiments, and it all starts in New York.
Yeah.
He didn't have a safe house or anything like this. This guy was doing these experiments on his friends at first in his apartment in New York.
Basically having acid parties without telling them that they were going to be taking acid.
And actually, you could argue that George Hunter White held the first acid parties in the history of the earth.
Right.
This guy was really – he'd make up batches of martinis and serve them to his guests. And, of course, the pitcher of martini was spiked to God knows how much LSD.
Well, that's one of the things, too, I was wondering is at the time they were just starting to experiment, so they didn't even know what was a full dose, what it would do. I mean, this is how they found out.
Yeah, yeah. And he had a terminology for what happened if you had a bad trip. He called it the horrors.
Right.
One of the reasons we know so much about this is because George White kept a diary of notes for his experiments, at least to maintain some semblance of experimentation.
Right.
He took notes on it. But yeah, so he'd serve his guests martinis, right, and then just sit back and take notes after it started kicking in. There was a whole subgroup of close friends of his that were actually inadvertently recruited, and they would bring their friends, and he actually had this kind of swinger social group.
Right.
And swinger, by every definition of the word, White apparently was into spike heel boots. He'd do anything for a woman in spike heel boots.
Yeah. Who wouldn't, though, you know?
Right. His friends were just imagine like the 50s shade ball porno swinger groups. And this is what White was at the center at, except he was, unbeknownst to all of his friends, a CIA operative experimenting on LSD
right.
with them.
So this needs to be a film in the works.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
I would go see that so many times.
I would.
So he's carrying out all the experiments. And again, there was a certain subgroup of friends who loved it. They, years later, in the 90s, a lot of this information came out, and it just fell to the wayside
right.
for reasons I can't understand. But a lot of them were like, we loved acid.
Right.
George loved acid. Like, we just took acid all the time. Some people didn't like acid, though.
Exactly. It can go one of two ways, generally, when it comes to LSD.
Yeah, there's not really a middle ground, I would think.
No.
So there's this one woman in particular named Barbara Newsom.
Oh, I felt terrible.
And she was like,
I can't believe
23,
this.
A young mother.
Yeah.
And she was married. And her husband was actually kind of this, kind of a cad, from what I understand. He was part of White's little swinger group.
Uh-huh.
But I also got the impression that he was kind of peripheral, wanted to be in further, but they just
right.
didn't think too highly of him. But White thought his wife was pretty hot, so he waits till her husband's out of town and invites her over. And Barbara Newsom was not really hip to what was going on.
No, she had a young kid at the
time.
She
had a 20-month-old baby that she brought to the party.
Right. So she clearly did not know what was going to happen.
Totally unaware of what was going on. So White doses her anyway, right?
Yeah.
And the part of the problem was White quickly got bored, especially if you were on a bad trip.
Uh-huh.
There was no padded room that he took you to, or he didn't hand you like a hash pipe or anything like that.
Right.
Like, you were on your own. He wanted you out of his hair.
Right.
And that was that. So
it was a big bummer for him, I guess.
Exactly. At the very least, it made him irritable. So
right.
he'd turn you out on the street, just tripping your head off.
Right.
And that's what became a Barbara Newsom. She was turned out on the street because she had a bad trip, and she went home. She never told anybody about it. Her husband later pieced it together. They eventually divorced.
Right. But she probably didn't even know what happened to her.
No. I don't think she had a clue what happened to her.
Yeah.
She became depressed. Her marriage fell apart. She ended up being committed on and off for the next 20 years.
Right.
And also, again, from the research I did, she was probably a little more fragile than the average person.
Yeah.
And something else could have happened to her in her life that put her through this.
Right.
The fact is, this woman was experimented on. It's documented fact. She was one of White's test subjects.
Right.
And her life fell apart. Right?
Sure.
She kind of represents the bad side of these experiments.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely the bad side. And one person died, isn't that correct?
Yeah, Dr. Frank Olson.
Yeah.
His son really has taken up the charge of trying to get the truth exposed. His father is definitely documented as having been tested on at one of those parties.
Right.
And now imagine, like, his father was an army scientist, a research scientist, whose specialty was in delivering poisons through aerosols.
Right.
He was a lab rat. He probably, I imagine his social skills weren't as quite refined as maybe White's or anybody else's. He goes to this party, and they give him a shot of dosed Cointreau.
Right.
And he does not handle it well.
No. And this is at Thanksgiving, too.
So it was around Thanksgiving.
These guys clearly had no qualms about, you know, this one lady had a baby, this guy, so the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And he skipped Thanksgiving with his family because he was so freaked out.
They actually contacted the closest CIA-approved doctor, who was, I think, a podiatrist or something like that.
Right.
But he was the closest physician. I think the guy was in Virginia, which is close by to where this CIA-Army conference took place. And so Dr. Olson's just freaking out, and he's doing it very loudly. I think he kind of took everybody off guard with his reaction to the LSD.
Right.
They bring this doctor, and the doctor's like, this guy needs some serious care, and basically we need to kidnap him.
Right. And he has corns on his feet.
Right.
To boot. So the podiatrist is always notices those things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How it's his training, right?
Yeah.
So they basically sequester this guy. They call his family and say, your husband isn't going to be home for Thanksgiving. He can't make it.
Right.
Basically, don't ask any questions.
Or any Thanksgiving, as it turns out.
Right. 8 days after his bad trip, he goes out the 10th story window of a hotel in New York.
Right.
And it was apparently suicide. That's how it was ruled. But years later, I think in 1992 or 4, his son, who actually started a website, the Frank Olson Project.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting stuff. He had his father's body exhumed, and there was evidence of pre-mortem blunt force trauma to the head.
Right.
Which kind of suggests, you know, this guy was probably murdered.
Exactly.
And a couple years after the body was exhumed, Ike Feldman, who posed as the pimp, we'll get to him in a second, in an interview with Spin Magazine, he said, you know, George Hunter White was doing the acid tests in New York at the time this guy went out of the hotel window in New York.
Right.
So, you know,
you
put two and two together. No one ever has definitively, but, you know, it kind of seems like the kind of guy White was. He didn't seem to have qualms about stuff like that.
No.
So, okay, New York's over.
Yeah, this is where it gets good. And sort of predictable when you look back, but they move the operation to and actually a funded place in San Francisco, of course.
Called the apartment called The Pad.
Yeah, that's literally, it was called The Pad.
And basically, I get the impression that White left his swinging social scene and his wife behind in New York, and he goes and takes the show on the road by himself in San Francisco.
Right.
And at first, let me describe The Pad real quick. It's this little apartment with like kind of bohemian art on the walls and, you know,
probably
God knows
Street.
What else. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was probably pretty close. One of the main features is a two-way mirror,
mm-hmm,
with the little hollowed out room behind it. And that looked out onto the main living room. Okay. So basically White used to take a bunch of acid, and he would pose as either a merchant seaman or like some sort of starving artist.
Right.
And he'd go into San Francisco and basically find the prostitutes and the Johns and the drug dealers. And he'd round them up and bring them back to his place and just dose them with acid.
Right. And they didn't feel bad because they considered these people just the dregs of society. So
yeah. They figured they were degenerates anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that there was probably a pretty wide threshold of, you know, who was fair game and who wasn't. Like, I'm sure if you were caught with a nudie mag under your mattress and you were married, they would have considered you fair game as a degenerate or whatever.
Here's some acid.
Yeah, right. So at first, White's rounding all these people up, right? And he's basically just partying with them in San Francisco on acid.
Gaining their trust.
Right. Eventually, he recruits Ike Feldman, that guy that we mentioned who did that 1994 Spin Magazine interview.
Right.
And Ike Feldman is just a badass. He is a tough, grizzled, old fringe of the law cop.
Right.
Right. He does whatever he's like the model for Vic Mackey from The Shield.
Uh-huh.
Whatever has to be done to get the job done, whatever. It doesn't matter how many times you break the law if at the end you're bringing in the bad guy or whatever. So he gets recruited by White, who basically goes and takes his rightful place behind the two-way mirror to watch how Feldman brings in the prostitutes and the Johns. And it got a little freaky from there.
Yeah. And, it kind of made me wonder if the whole culture of San Francisco was kind of known in the 60s as, the counterculture, the revolution, the free love, the summer of love. If the CIA actually kind of helped create this in the 1950s.
I can tell you most decidedly it did.
Yeah.
And the reason why, here's the punchline to the whole thing. This makes this whole thing beautiful and elegant, as a mathematician would put it. One of the people who signed up for the legitimate experiments, actually I think it was at a VA hospital or something, was a fellow by the name of Ken Kesey.
Yes.
Ken Kesey was an orderly at a mental hospital at the time. He was basically researching for his later book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
Kesey's other claim to fame was he was the founder of the Merry Pranksters.
Right.
And the Merry Pranksters hung out with the Hells Angels.
Yeah.
The Grateful Dead.
Rode around in a colorful bus.
And basically were the establishment of the hippie movement.
Right. And the Tom Wolfe book, Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, is a great read.
Oh, it's a great book.
Yeah, and it really gets into this period in our history.
And it's about Kesey and the Merry Pranksters.
Yeah.
And Kesey was one of these willing participants in a test subject by the CIA on LSD. He was given it a couple of times, realized, holy cow, I love this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Found out that Sandoz was the company that was making it, got a bunch, shared it
right.
with his friends. Once it went illegal, he also befriended Stanley Owsley, who was like the premier underground acid chemist in the 60s.
Right.
And it all just kind of went from there.
Uh-huh.
So directly, the CIA led to the birth of the hippie counterculture, and any remnants and
right.
traces of it still alive today.
Yeah, that they later would condemn, and cops would put the beat down on the hippies and the beatniks, and just kind of funny that it was kind of created by the government.
It's amazing.
It is.
It's beautiful. So that's the story of the CIA and LSD and the gingerbread man.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so stick around, because this seems almost unimportant. We're going to tell you what article makes Chuck want to go out and eat a McRib or two.
Right, LSD to the McRib. What a
segue. Stick around for that right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right, and the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Okay, thanks for sticking around. Chuck?
Yes?
What makes you want to eat a McRib, my man?
Well, what doesn't make me want to eat a McRib, Josh?
I don't know.
McRib is a temporary menu item, a featured menu item that you see at McDonald's occasionally. And as you know, it's some sort of pork product compressed into the shape of ribs.
Bones and all.
Yeah, but there are no bones.
No.
It's just part of the pork product.
It's
represents
the appearance
the bone.
Of bones, yeah.
And they put it on an oblong bun, slather it with some sauce, and it's delish.
You're preaching to the choir, friend.
I've
had those, and I'm hooked on them as well.
Right. But this isn't a McDonald's commercial.
No.
So you should tell them the article.
Well, it's, I think, top five McDonald's menu items that didn't make it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a bit of silliness, but it's kind of a fun read.
It is. It's very interesting. It's actually, I took it, it's written by our esteemed colleague Jane McGrath, who did a heck of a job with it. It's almost this glance into the corporate culture of McDonald's.
Right, and marketing and how it goes wrong, terribly wrong.
Yeah. And, there were two things on there that I would like to have seen. Shamrock Shake.
Yeah.
Love the Shamrock Shake.
I've never had one.
Oh, dude, they're great. And the other was the, what was the one that keeps the hot side hot and the cool side cool?
The McDLT.
Yes. That's right. That's right. I would have liked to have seen those on there because I just loved the packaging for the McDLT.
Right.
The thing was cool.
I think that in the green movement these days, that wouldn't go over because it's twice the packaging.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can read all sorts of stuff about the green movement and plenty of menu items that didn't really make it for McDonald's.
Right.
And don't forget to read about the CIA and LSD. All of them can be found by typing in some clever words in the search bar on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.